This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we're sponsored by Jamf, makers of the Jamfro MDM solution for Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TV. And we'll tell you more about those as the show goes on. Hey Bradley, how's it going?
Back in at it. I got back from vacation yesterday actually. We went to this place up in Gatlinburg, Tennessee called the Wilderness at the Smokies. It's like basically an indoor water park area. It's really neat. Very inexpensive. You basically pay for the hotel and get access to multiple water parks.
That sounds like a great family time away.
It was. It was nice. So if you're ever in Tennessee, it's a great place to check out. But we have lots to talk about, as we expected. But before we get rolling, one thing that I did see today that I thought would be interesting to our listeners is that Google Drive is releasing an entirely new Mac app for...
Yeah, that news just broke.
Yeah, and so now this doesn't affect G Suite customers just yet because they don't have a G Suite version coming out just yet. So this is really on the consumer side. It's going to be called a backup and sync app. And from what I can tell, it's going to merge the Google Photos uploader into it. Mm-hmm. Right now they're separate apps, so it'll basically be one app. And it looks like it's going to be coming out later this month, end of June. But the looks like there's going to be an enterprise app called Drive File Stream that's be available later this year. So, and again, I imagine this has something to do with Team Drives, because obviously that is not a consumer version.
Yeah, and I bet they're going to try and hit that feature that everybody's trying to do now, which is the files look like they're there, but they're not there until you use them. Is it Dropbox? They call it Dropbox Infinite or something like that?
Yeah, and I have a paid account with Dropbox, and I haven't ever had that. I don't know if it's like still coming or like we have an enterprise account at work that I don't use, and the guys have never mentioned it. I don't know. I mean,
We'll see. I guess Team Drives are they're the big missing piece on Mac and Windows syncing at the moment, isn't it?
Yes, and honestly, the app is just okay. I mean, it's functional, but like one of the reasons we keep the Dropbox account is like especially for syncing large files, Dropbox is way more reliable. I mean, Google Drive will eventually work, but like you may have to like kickstart it a few times.
Yeah, we've been using it. We primarily use the iPad app, of course, but in one of my classes, the one where we use Amazon Workspaces and we use the Windows stuff. We actually have a sort of procedure that we know now, which is how to restart a crashed Google Drive app on Windows because it doesn't handle being shut down and resumed very well. So, yeah, an improvement to that would be nice.
So we are a week out from WWDC and the announcement. So lots of things to kind of run through. But what do you say we start with new hardware?
I think so. Yeah, that's it's. The hardware story is quite simple, I think. It's good, but it's simple. And really, what we're seeing here is that it was the iPad Pro line that got some love this time. And essentially, the 9.7-inch iPad Pro, the one that we have in school, is gone, replaced by a 10.5-inch model. And the 10.5 and the 12.9 are now completely unified in terms of all of their hardware, apart from obviously the physical size. So you've got in there A10X chip, same as the iPhone 7. A True Tone display on both, not just on the small one. This thing they're calling ProMotion, which is basically a 120Hz refresh rate screen, which people are raving about online. I haven't seen one myself, Bradley. I don't know if you've seen one. But the people are saying it looks like, you go into the Genius Bar and they've got those kind of animated demos of how to use an iOS device behind the counter on the wall. Mm-hmm. People are saying it kind of looks like that in real life. Like it's so good it's almost fake looking. So that's quite interesting. I haven't seen it myself yet, but
yeah, I do know that there is an option in the accessibilities to limit the frame rate as well. I know it, depending on like if how various things affect you, and we've had that through the years where you could disable parallax and stuff, and so there is an option to kind of limit that as well if it does bother you.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that it's a variable refresh rate as well, so you can have somebody showed a demo of half of the screen running a video at 24 frames per second, like an old movie, and then sketching at high speed on the right hand side, and the refresh rate was being varied for both of those parts. What else we got? We got a 12 megapixel camera, 4K video camera on both, and a flash, which is basically the camera kit from the old 9.7 inch iPad Pro brought over to the 10.5 and the 12.9 as well. And both support USB 3 connections and fast charging through the adapter, But of course, this being Apple, neither of them come with the 29 watt adapter in the box that you would need to take advantage of that. So you're going to have to drop another £80 on cable and adapter to get the benefit of that. But at least the hardware's in there, you know.
Yeah, that's really a shame, and that's something I was kind of thinking through last night. I mean, the amount of the accessories you could spend on an iPad Pro is quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I added up, if you were to take an iPad, 12.9-inch iPad Pro kit, and you wanted the best thing and the full kit, how much money would you be spending? And if you were going to buy a 512 gig, now that's another thing to mention, Bradley, there's a 512 gig option, it's the biggest iPad we've ever seen, 512 gig cellular 12.9-inch iPad Pro, smart keyboard, the pencil, the power adapter, the lightning to USB-C cable, and this leather sleeve that they've brought out where you can kind of keep the pencil and the iPad together, you're looking at £1,670. Which is, you know, for a device that sort of started in the kind of £500 range, and we thought that was kind of the future of computing, you know, things have gotten a lot more expensive in that time. I mean, of course, a lot more powerful as well, but wow.
Yeah, I would like to see, I don't know, like there's a part of me that would like to see some bundling options. So if you did want to buy everything, maybe you get, and I'll start getting some like bundle rates off this stuff. So like if you say maybe sell a kit that includes all that stuff together for, I don't know, 15% off or something, just to I don't know, that's just that is a lot of money. You end up spending like as much money on accessories as you do anything.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how many people actually go into the Apple store and get the full kit right away. I mean, I know even in my ownership of this iPad Pro, which has been since it first came out in 2015, I've kind of added bits to it, you know. So like I got the iPad and the pencil first, and then later I got the keyboard, and then later again I got the USB-C charger as well. So it's kind of been, as my usage of it has grown, I've added more to it. So it's not like I've gone out and bought the whole thing all at once, but you know, when you look at it now, and of course these are post-Brexit prices as well, so our currency is not worth what it was either. But just as a point of comparison, I had a look at, you know, well, what does a Mac cost these days? And that kit that I mentioned there is more expensive than all the standard MacBook Air configurations, all the standard 21-inch iMac configurations, half of the standard configurations of the 13-inch MacBook Pro with Touch Bar, and just about £220 less than the entry-level 15-inch MacBook Pro. So it's, I mean, I think one of the things that I take away from that is that the iPad Pro line is cannot be, like, except for the super rich, it cannot be like an accessory to your Mac. You know, it's really got to be, you know, if you're spending that kind of money, it's got to be a really serious, you know, major, if not only, computer for most people. So it's quite interesting to look at that pricing and that lineup in light of what comes later with iOS 11 and what iOS 11 can do for most people.
Yeah, I mean, if you want an accessory to your Mac, the 290 or 329 iPad is really the model for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's still a great iPad, don't get me wrong.
So yeah, that is that's interesting. That I don't see that going away. This is, it's like they've started low and then kind of worked their way up, and obviously they're making, I would imagine, a killing on these accessories.
There's a £29 pencil case holder as well.
Right. The smart keyboard is the same one. It's just obviously bigger. The 12.9 one is exactly the same, but there's a new 10.5-inch smart keyboard. So they're exactly the same thing. The exact same issues. Marco Arment tweeted last night his was bending up or flipping up just the way yours did. I know a lot of y'all's did. So, yeah, they're the same ones. There's a part of me that wants to upgrade to the 12.9-inch new Pro, and I've even thought about if I do that to get the Logitech keyboard versus the smart keyboard.
Some people were tweeting pictures of that today, and it seems really thick, you know, that wraparound case. It's actually thicker than some of the laptops, so I don't know. I just feel like, I mean, for me, I could obviously just take out the iPad part of my setup and drop in the new iPad and keep all the other accessories the same. I've no compelling need to replace the keyboard or anything like that. But I kind of feel like for somebody who's got a 12.9-inch iPad, it's not something that I've got to run out and get the new one straight away. But when I get my new iPad, whenever I get it, it'll be nice to have. But I think, you know, one of the things that has dogged the iPad line for a little while is people holding on to their iPads longer and longer. And I wonder if, you know, maybe Apple said, right, well, fine, if that's the way it's going to be, you need to pay a lot more money for your iPad. Or Those prices are just going to encourage people to keep their iPad for longer and longer. Because if I'm looking at, you know, even just replacing the iPad device itself, you're looking at a kind of, you know, £600-800 spend just to get the new iPad device alone. I'm looking at that pretty hard, you know, and I'm saying, you know, this A9 based iPad is great, and I don't really wait for it very often. So how soon do I need yet another one? Probably not this round, maybe next time.
Well, the case you could make is the same thing like I make for phones every year, is like, if you sell it today, what's the resale value worth towards towards a new one?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see, you know, how much, like, I've got a 128 gig iPad Pro. Like, what's the resale value in that? I mean, how many people are actually out there looking for a used one of them? I don't know. I feel like, because I tend to buy the highest end models all the time, that is kind of like buying a very high-end car. You take a much bigger hit on it than if you were buying like a mainstream model that most people would want. So I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, I was going to look on Swappa while we're talking and see if I can get kind of what a first-gen iPad Pro is. So next thing on the list. So we gone through the hardware. Now I don't honestly think this will affect, the new hardware will affect most schools. I think the 329 iPad is the one that most schools will be deploying.
Yeah, it's very hard to see mass deployment of iPad Pros, except in a very specific professional context. I think the 329 fifth generation iPad looks like the classroom iPad going forward. And my hope is that they can get at least a basic level of Apple Pencil support into that model before I have to refresh in 2 years' time. Because I would hate to lose Apple Pencil capability from the school, but you know, I can't see us really getting into, you know, the 10.5-inch iPad Pro territory at this point.
Let's see. On Swappa, you can get a mint-conditioned 128-gig Wi-Fi-only iPad Pro 12.9-inch, $545. Now that, again, that's the Wi-Fi only.
Mine's a cellular.
So yeah, I'll keep looking at the old cellulars. But yeah, that is tough. I mean that is tough. Okay, you can get here's a mint condition 128 gig iPad Pro 12.9-inch with LTE 620.
Yeah. I don't know if I need a 512. I mean, I don't think I have occasionally touch the outer limits of 128 gigs on my iPad, but mostly that's when I'm traveling and I'm downloading, you know, outrageous amounts of movies just in case I get bored on the plane, you know. But in normal day-to-day use, I think it's, and this is something I'm going to come back to, Bradley, remind me if I don't, about how I have this theory that iOS is going to like a caching model, more like Chromebooks. But we can talk about that when we get to iOS 11.
All right, so Apple Classroom 2.1. What's new?
This is cool, right? I got this up and running. There's a, if you have a developer account, you can request access through TestFlight to the beta version of Classroom 2.1. And it builds on Apple Classroom 2, where in Apple Classroom 2, you had the idea that you start a class and then you end a class. And during that time, there's a notion of like the current class, and the class does things like it shows up in AirDrop. So you can AirDrop to the whole class, for example. Now, what happens in Classroom 2.1 is that when you end a class, Classroom has been tracking what the students have done on their iPads, and it shows you a summary of which apps were used during the class and who used them, and also shows you like a files inbox for all the things that were airdropped to you during the class. This is really cool because it's down to the second, right? So you can see, it shows you, here are all the students who joined the class, and here are all the apps that were used during the class. And under each app, it tells you how many students used it. So you might see, if you're doing a research project, you might see everybody used Safari, everybody used Keynote, some people used iBooks, a few people used YouTube or BBC News or something like that. And then one person used Plants vs. Zombies. And you're like, why does somebody use Plants vs. Zombies in a research class? I don't know. And you can tap on it or tap on each of those apps, and it shows you who used them and at what stage in the class did they use them. So it's a very, very fine-grained set of pieces of information. I showed some of the public screenshots to some of the kids in class, and they were just like, I don't believe that's possible now. And their next question was, does it show you what websites you're on? And then some of the less wise people gave away their thought process and said, see, if you're watching YouTube in Safari, can it tell you that? I was like, busted. So It doesn't actually show you which URLs anybody used. I think that would be a nice enhancement for another version, and I'll probably file that request. But it shows you that your people were on Safari or people were on Pages or whatever. So yeah, I think that's going to be a cool feature for teachers who you know, need that little bit of accountability in the classroom.
Well, here's what I like about the Apple Classroom updates is that there were updates. I know that sounds sounds stupid, but like this is, you know, it's got some good enhancements. It shows it got some attention this past year, and I like that. I think that shows that they're like continuing. It's not like a one and done. Maybe we'll pick this up in 2 or 3 years, sort of thing.
I mean, Apple Classroom is a major selling point for iOS in schools now. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who are involved in like resellers or consulting in the kind of way that I sometimes do. And they say that Apple Classroom is like the number one thing that gets people from skeptical to convinced, right? Because so many teachers are scared of losing control of the classroom through technology. And you can kind of see that with the enhancements in 2.1 is that people, this is something that makes teachers feel relaxed about bringing the iPad into the classroom, as if they can have this thing that will help them maintain the attention of the class. And I think the key thing I like about Classroom is that it's lightweight, right? It's not like super security, you know, and kids are always allowed to be, oh, do you know, if you reboot the iPad, you can get out of the lock and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, you know, this isn't like, you know, the Federal Reserve or something I'm trying to program here. It's just a classroom, and I just want you to stop fiddling for 5 minutes and listen to me. And for me, that it's pitched at exactly the right level of complexity, difficulty, security, all of these things, which is just enough to run a classroom. And that's how it should be. Like, you know, classrooms aren't like, they shouldn't be like prison computers, you know. And that's what I feel about Apple Classroom, but it's extremely influential amongst teachers in terms of what you can do with it there.
Okay, so before we move on, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. It's the great folks at Jamf. Now, Jamf Pro is the best solution for deploying, managing, and securing your Apple devices. Over 3 million students are empowered by Jamf every single day. You can bring learning to a whole new level for your students by providing the tools they need to be successful in today's classroom by using Jamf and Jamf Pro. Start a free trial at jamf.com. That's J-A-M-F. So, moving on, what else was new? So the system administrator stuff, not a ton new here. I was going to pull up the Jamf blog, and I'll list that in the show notes. They had a good list of things you can do new with the new software.
Big year for Apple TV.
Yeah, it sounds weird, but I think it is all is positioned around bringing these devices up to parity from a management perspective.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be one of the differentiating features of that. I mean, remember we did that show a while ago with digital signage? I think MDM management or unified management of your signs alongside your devices is going to be the differentiating factor for bringing in an Apple TV versus bringing in, say, a Chromecast or something like that.
So the big thing was you can now sideload devices into the device enrollment program. So, gosh, I never thought we'd see this, but clearly this was causing some people some pain somewhere. So before this, to get devices into DEP, you had to purchase it through an authorized Apple reseller or directly through Apple Education. And then the serial numbers would be kind of, you know, automatically imported. Well, now you can add any serial number into your DEP, and it will be there. Now, the user has 30 days where they can remove the device from DEP. Then after that, you'd have to actually remove it from DEP the normal way. But so like if someone, you know, donates, you know, 10 iPads to you, you can now manage them, you know, through DEP and get over-the-air supervision. Now, I guess my question to you, and this is a longer question, long-term, or a bigger question, would this change your mind about doing Bring Your Own iPad program?
No, not really. I'll tell you why. I mean, you're absolutely right, Bradley, that one of the things they actually called out in the WWDC session where they announced this was donated devices or devices that change hands in some way that they can still be professionally managed. And I think this comes along with like the changes to Apple Classroom in 2.0 where you could have unmanaged classes and making it so that, like, if you're on the golden path of deployment like I am, I get all the goodies, right, because I do it by the book. But if you're not in a position to do it by the book, i.e. buy brand new devices through an Apple reseller who's able to do DEP and all of these things, you basically are left out in the cold, and you're 5 years behind in terms of your deployment strategy from where I am. And that's not your fault. That's Apple's fault, because they've put in place all these walls. But what they're doing is they're slowly taking down those walls. And I think this is kind of a surprising one for me. But this 30-day probation period is kind of an interesting one, because in iOS 11, there's a new screen. You know the screen that you see when you basically have to, it says accept configuration from your school. The panel is now called remote management. And it has more information about what supervision does. But if your device is in this probation period, there's a button at the bottom of that panel that says remove from remote management. And then the device will be wiped and removed from your DEP. And then the user can just set it up like a retail device. The device is also wiped when you add it into DEP as well. So there's still quite a big hurdle to go over. So if you think about how you'd have to run that in school, you'd have to sort of say like, right, buy your devices, your iOS devices, before the summer holidays and drop them all off to us. We'll put them all in DEP, let them sit there for 30 days, and then you can have them back, which is, you know, it's like, yeah, you can do it, but, you know, tricky business. So, yeah.
All right. So next up, iOS 11. So I'm going to preface this. Obviously, everybody has seen a lot of this stuff, but I have this theory that iOS 11 is a great release for people who use iPads already. But if you're someone that, for various reasons, can't use an iPad as your main computing device, it doesn't do a lot to help you. And so for me, for example, like my two big issues with using an iPad full time is, A, it's stupid, it's ergonomics, where I like having two monitors. I like having the monitor up high and keyboard and mouse down low. And then working in like web content systems is still really bad on iOS. I have a blog up on Chambers Daily that I wrote about that. Like, for example, when I was out of town, I didn't take my Mac. I just had my iPhone with me. And again, this is an iPhone, not an iPad. But I was needing to reorder a navigation in WordPress. And it's literally not possible to do in iOS. It's just not built. It's built to where you can click and drag it. And it's not built for touch. So it really didn't do anything to address that. But that saying, there's still tons of great stuff in iOS 11.
Yeah, I think I like the way you've categorized it there. And I think that you're correct, as long as the reasons you can't use iOS at the moment are the reasons that the things that they haven't touched. Okay. But for example, like there are some people who like work with a lot of files. Like, you know, some people in business, a lot of their job is like emailing attachments to people. And one of the big limitations, you know, like on Canvas, that Federico and I complained about since like literally the second episode of Canvas, was the fact that with the document provider plugins on iOS, you could only do a single file operation at a time. And that is okay for most people, but for people who do that a lot, I mean, I had an example today where I had to email four PDF files to a parent. And the way I did that was I put the four PDF files into iCloud Drive, and I went into the email I was going to write to them, and I did press and hold, add attachment, iCloud Drive, pick, press and hold, add attachment, iCloud Drive, pick, press and hold. You see, and just it becomes incredibly tedious if you have to do a lot of these things. And I think some of the features in iOS take those things that you could do, but they were agonizing, and they make them very easy. So in that sense, like, there were people who could have used iOS before, but they didn't have the patience to do it, if you like. And I'm not being critical there. I mean, we've all got to get our work done. And if you have a lower threshold for tedium than perhaps I do in this case, then you could have used iOS technically, but it was so annoying to you for so much of your day that you just didn't do it. And I think that's the kind of person who can be brought fully into working on iOS right now. But you're right. Web designers are not doing a good job of touch interfaces. And I think that is, in iOS 12, I think Safari, but Apple needs to lose their religion on Safari as well. I mean, I think in some ways, you know, losing my religion is kind of like the theme of iOS 11, because there's a lot of things, like we just mentioned with DEP, like putting an app called Files on the device as well, things like that. We're starting to see the end of iOS as a completely distinct conceptual operating system from macOS. I know we've had like a little dock before and things like that, but now we've got a dock that's very much like the Mac dock. We've got drag and drop. We've got all of these different things. And I think that's maybe the next stage for Apple, is like they need to go through again and ask people, why can you not use an iOS device now? Oh, it's the web. Right, we'll fix that for you as well.
So, yeah. So what's new? Screen recording. That is the I think one of the biggest features in a while.
Yeah.
There's just so many times that's going to be useful for troubleshooting, for explaining things, particularly remote troubleshooting. You can just now, instead of having to plug up to a Mac and do something and record it, which nobody did, or download some funky app that made it into the App Store for about 30 minutes. Now you can, and you can also turn on the microphone as well. So going to be lots of great workflows for education.
You can already see it on Twitter, people just demoing something with a 20-second video. It's just so helpful. It's going to be huge.
Let's see. New screenshot workflow. And I do know, I believe Command-Shift-4 on the Smart Keyboard does like take a screenshot like it does on the Mac and then brings up the markup tool as well.
The markup tools, yeah. Yeah. So the coolest thing about the screenshot workflow is that when you take a screenshot, it doesn't go into your Photos app until you explicitly save it there. So it goes into this little popover window, and you press on it and you come up with the pencil tools. Basically, you can mark it up, and then you can, there's a share button or a save button, and only then would it go into your Photos if you do want to save it. But you can then share it like to Twitter or by iMessage or something directly from that screen as well. And if you don't do anything, if you don't press on that overlay, it just disappears after about 20 seconds or something. So it's, you can screenshot to your heart's content. It's really, really cool. Game changer already.
Well, and I use that a lot on the Mac as well. Simple markup, just turning in bugs. So that'll be huge. So tell me about the new dock.
Well, the first thing is that it resizes dynamically to allow more apps. So on iPads, since a long time, you've had 6 apps or less in the dock. But now on a 10.5 inch iPad Pro or a 9.7, you can have 13 apps in the dock, or 15 on a 12.9 inch Pro. And the icons just shrink as you increasingly add more. So it doesn't roll or off the screen or anything like that. It just shrinks. And on the right-hand side of a divider, there's a space for 3 apps, and in there, iOS tries to guess which apps you might want to use next, including things like continuity. So you have, if you're looking at iMessage on your phone, you'll notice that iMessage appears on that side of the dock as well. This is actually really important, because the dock plays a very important role in multitasking now, and we'll talk about that when we get into split screen and slide over as well.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I'm seeing like dock photos shared online. It's like the OS 10. I think it's where it's like the OS 10 Tiger background, and then the Files app and the only thing on the home screen. It's kind of retro.
Everything old is new again. Yep. So let's talk about split screen, right? Because this broke my brain for a week, and I'm kind of glad, Bradley, that we're doing this show a couple of weeks after, or a week and a half after. So I've had a little bit of time. I've actually got iOS 11 on a device here, and it took me about 4 days to realize what they'd done. And what they've done is they've basically brought spaces from macOS to iOS. Now, the reason this is hard to think about is because we never really thought about what it was we had before. But in iOS 10, effectively what you had was you had a single split view where you could change the app on either side. And on the left-hand side, the so-called primary app, you could go back to the home screen, you could use Spotlight, you could use Command-Tab to swap the left-hand app around. And if you ever wanted to change the right-hand side app, you had to pull down and use that picker drawer that we have scrolled for years and years and years now. In iOS 11, you have essentially unlimited numbers of spaces or split views. And when you put an app into split view, you're choosing whether or not to put it on the left-hand side or the right-hand side. So the primary method of doing this that was demoed at WWDC was pulling up the dock by swiping up from the bottom like it used to do for Control Center, and then dragging an app and dropping it on the left or right-hand side of the split. And it's the same gesture to replace the left-hand app as to replace the right-hand app. So you're using a consistent set of gestures to place apps in these pairs. But the thing that really confused me was the fact that once you put two apps in a split, they stay in that split until you take one of those apps into another view or collapse the split. Does that make sense?
Well, and they're
kind of persistent pairs, yeah.
Well, I called that, if you remember.
You did, yeah. Yeah. So that was what I just couldn't get my head around. It was like, why is it when I command tab and bring up another app, both apps disappear? And the reason is because you're not switching apps anymore, you're switching spaces, right? And the app pairs are persistent and stable until you choose to either remove the app or collapse the split. So you totally called it, and I was very confused for several days about it. But I think the game is going to be in iOS productivity now is to identify pairs of apps that work well together for you and just kind of leave them there and switch between those spaces more freely.
Would you say that this Spaces feature feels better built for the 12.9-inch iPad versus the 9.7 or 10.5?
Well, I think the thing about the 12.9 is that you get two iPad interfaces. Even on the 10.5, you're still getting essentially two iPhone interfaces. And that's a bit of a disappointment for that device, and that's really limited my interest in it, is because I really want those two iPad interfaces on either side of the split. But I think... I think it's going to be equally good on both. I think you might use slightly different techniques, like you might use a four-finger swipe a little bit more on the smaller one, whereas you've got bigger space to do other gestures on the bigger device. But I still haven't really got a good handle on how iOS 11 is going to change your behavior. And I think there's going to be, for people, you know, like you and I, who've used the iPad a lot as in iOS 10 and earlier, we're going to have to unlearn quite a lot of our behaviors to get the most out of iOS 11.
Yeah, and I think that'll come from time. But looking at when I've seen the video and thinking about the spaces, I don't know. Like we talked about it, you know, a year ago, and it said kind of identified the 9.7-inch iPad at the time with basically the way the split screen works. Those are, like, to me, single app primary, and multitasking is kind of secondary. Like split screen multitasking, maybe you use more, you know, pullover, where, because again, that's two fairly small screens side by side. So to me, it's where you get to the 12.9-inch iPad, and then, gosh, I'm even thinking, could we go up from there? Could we have a 15-inch iPad?
Mm-hmm. It is not inconceivable to me that that's possible. Yeah. Yep. One of the things about split view as well, or slide over, is slide over is like the one where you pull in from the side, but you don't put it two up with the other app. That still exists, but you can now float it. It sort of floats over the app, and you can move it from the left edge to the right hand side, kind of like the picture in picture video. You can flick it across to the other side, and then you can sort of promote it to be split side by side with the app you were looking at. But see, if you have an iPad with 4 GB RAM, which is any of the 12.9s and the 10.5 iPad Pro, you can actually have two apps side by side, and then you can slide over a third application, and all of them are live at the same time. That's going to be a very interesting way to work for some real high-end tasks, is to have that going on as well. And technically, you could have four apps, because you could have two apps in a split, one app in slide over, and you could also have the picture-in-picture video running as well. So on those really high-end iPads, you can actually do quite a lot with them in one go.
That's crazy. Come a long way.
Yeah. Sure have, yeah. So drag and drop is, of course, one of the kind of big standout features of iOS 11. And this means that you can basically drag anything anywhere, more or less. Now, developers have to support it, but... just thinking about some use cases in school that will be very interesting, like a big thing we do a lot is making presentations, and we use a lot of photos from the internet to do that. So you've got Safari on one side, you've got Keynote on the other, and you can just grab a picture and drag it into your slides. You know, that's going to be a game changer. It's going to stop clogging up a lot of photo libraries, because it's, instead of doing save image and then pick image, you can just do drag and drop. Nothing goes into your Photos app. That's going to be really cool.
Yeah, I saw a video earlier from Serenity Caldwell from over at Idmore, and she was like uploading four images at once into their CMS in Safari.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I've kind of often thought there could be an option for some sort of camera roll inbox. Because I've noticed, you know, I don't have this issue because I use Google Photos, but like, let's say you're someone that has, 30, 40 gigs of photos in iCloud. Well, if you download something from the web, it organizes it by date in the based off the EXIF date, right?
Yes, it does. Yeah, that can be a problem.
So it can go like, let's say the image was made in 2010. You're looking for that image like at the bottom, and you have no idea where that is. Or even like a save from Safari album that's auto generated or something.
Yeah, or even just a recently added.
Yeah,
you know, something like that. I completely agree. Yeah. I wonder if you could make that on Photos for Mac and sync it over a smart album. I don't know if that works.
That'd be interesting. It could be good homework. Yeah.
But yeah, drag and drop is fun. And I think one of the cool things about drag and drop is you can, if you start a drag on any object, say an app, you can actually tap other apps with another finger to add them to the pile that you're dragging, if you like. And that was Serenity's video there, where she was picking up one photo from Photos and then adding two or three more and dropping them all on an upload button in Safari. So as cool as that is, that feature has actually been in Keynote for iOS since the first version of Keynote for iOS. Now, if you remember Phil Schiller demonstrating that you can pick up a single slide, you can try this today on iOS 10, it works. Pick up a slide by pushing and holding on it, and then you can tap other slides to pick up a bundle, and then you can move them somewhere else in your presentation. And in 7 years of teaching iWork Keynote presentation stuff, I have never seen anybody do that. So it will be interesting to see just how many people we ever see doing something like that. I am a little bit concerned that some of these things in iOS 11 require like very good motor skills to be able to do. You know, holding down a drag while you use your other hand to do a bunch of stuff and then dropping the thing accurately. I can imagine a lot of kids are going to be pretty frustrated with that if we try and push them into using that a lot. So I think maybe just the way that you present all the features of iOS 11 might be quite important, because if you try and say, well, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this, and you can pick up multiple things at once and all that stuff, kids are going to try it and get very frustrated, I think. So I'm not saying they shouldn't have done it, but I'm saying like for schools, we might want to be a wee bit moderate about how we present some of these features, just so that kids don't get frustrated with some of it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be a lot more to learn. And from an accessibility standpoint, that is going to be difficult if you have motor skill issues.
Yeah, not everybody's got two hands at work.
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to be funny, but that's absolutely true.
But, I think if there's nothing in the accessibility for this year, maybe that's an option for next year to to do that.
I mean, the weirdest thing in iOS 11 is, like, if you want to place a new app in split view, you can pull up the dock and you can drag an app into either side of the split. That's fine. But if the app you want is not in the dock, what you have to do is you have to go back to the home screen, start dragging the app you want to put on one side of the split. With your other hand, slide from the bottom to the top to go into the multitasking interface. Tap on the app you just had open to bring it back to the front, and then hover this other app over to one other or other side of the split, and then drop it in there. So there's quite a complicated little kind of bit of piano playing you've got to do there to make that work. So I think we need to rethink that a little bit. I think if you're looking for an app to go into split view and it's not in the dock, there needs to be an easier way to see all your apps while also seeing the target at the same time. Because the question is, now I can see my apps, how do I get back to the split view that I want to drop it in? And it's not clear to me that that's a very easy thing to do right now.
No. And my hope is that enough people are seeing this stuff and are filing radars and filing bug reports, and some of this stuff can kind of get worked out. Because a lot can change between now and when it's released. This is no way a final release. Things can change a lot.
No, but I think now is the time to make a fuss about it, you know, because the chances of something being changed now are much, much higher than if you were to file that at like the beginning of August, let's say. You know, so now is the time to shout about stuff like that. And I think there's a couple of things to be said. And I am aware that I'm kind of making a bit of a fuss about it on Twitter. I've filed a lot of radars against the stuff that I've talked about here. But I am a little bit concerned. I don't want to over-egg the pudding, but a little bit concerned that some of the actions you might want to do in iOS are either undiscoverable or just physically very hard to do.
Yes, yes. But again, this is kind of like first take. So again, hopefully Yeah. It'll, I think by like beta 4, things generally start to get, beta 4 and 5, they generally are more locked in. So we'll revisit this then, see how it is.
You want to talk about the Files app really briefly?
Yeah, yes.
Or maybe not so briefly. It's quite a big topic.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I think, so basically the rundown of this Files app is kind of like iCloud Drive on steroids, I guess, is a way to look at it. But the cool thing is it's expanding the document provider API out. So now like Google Drive and OneDrive and Dropbox and those folks can hook into the Files app and you can manage all that stuff from the Files app. So you can like move documents around, save documents, and... so I'm excited about that. Now, here's where I think this will be interesting. Okay. So like right now, if you save a doc to the, like a file to iCloud Drive, it basically doesn't, it gives it the appearance that it's like auto uploaded to iCloud, but it saves it to the drive and then uploads it. Okay. So that gives it the perception that iCloud Drive is way faster than Dropbox, because in Dropbox, if you save a document to that, it has to upload it first and then it's there. And so my thought process is, and I haven't tested this yet, obviously, because I'm on the Dropbox beta team, but I haven't seen anything about this. Is if you like say save a document to Files in Dropbox, that it could then kind of stay up in the background uploading, where before it wouldn't keep uploading or it would time out. Does that make sense? Yeah. What I'm saying?
Yeah. No. You've put your finger on what is supposed to happen now, which is that. All operations are supposed to return immediately. If people want to go and watch it, there are two sessions in the WWDC videos about using file extensions and plugins for the Files app. And basically what they say is that, yeah, you should be able to do that in the background, but you should return control to the user straight away. So you should get that kind of appearance for all cloud providers if they adopt it correctly. And for me, that's kind of what's exciting about it, is that there's now going to be this consistent interface, right? What you see in the Files app is actually almost entirely made available to apps. So you think about Keynote and Pages, for example. You know how when you open them, they open up to that file view and you can see all the files you've got in iCloud Drive. You're essentially looking at the app sandbox inside iCloud Drive. The idea is that apps should replace their custom file views of their own sandbox with a system-provided plugin element, which is basically the Files app inside your app. So you're going to see that interface in a lot of places, right? If you deal with files in an app, in iWork, or, you know, in principle, you should be able to see it in Office as well and other places like that. You're going to see that interface a lot. So that's going to be where you start. Even if you go into Keynote to open up your Keynote file, you're going to see something that looks like the Files app. Or if you go to Files first and then launch Keynote, you're going to get the same effect. So I think... essentially, the Files app is a very thin wrapper around that little plugin that's going into every app, or should go into every app quite soon. So we can only sort of hope that developers adopt that in a widespread fashion. Where I think it's going to be a little bit weird is if anybody looks at their iCloud Drive app, you've got the folders and files that you made, and then you've got a bunch of app sandboxes in there as well. You know, you've got the Keynote folder and the Pages folder, and I think Apple needs to find a way to migrate those away. And I don't know if it's going to be okay just to delete them, because you certainly can delete those folders. But what are we going to do? How are we going to go from a sandboxes in the cloud model that we have at the moment to basically just, you know, a Dropbox kind of model or a Finder for the cloud era? And I think it's I'm kind of excited about Files, because I think that it is Finder for the cloud. You know, I was concerned. You know, a lot of people, you know, for years now, nearly a decade, have been saying, well, they just need to put the Finder on iOS. They need to give it a file system. They need to give it a file system. And I was thinking, that's not the future I think we need to have, because files have to be in the cloud, right? For you know, disaster recovery and security and all of these things, it's much better to have your files in the cloud. But if you're just to say, well, okay, there's, you know, your iCloud Drive, you've got your Dropbox, and then you've got a folder of stuff on this iPad, like, it's just way too easy to lose. And I think what they've done with Files is they've made it so that you've basically got a file system, but it's backed by the cloud. And that's, to me, that's actually the right thing to do. And there's a supported plugin API, and it's not just a case of like little apps running in the background looking for changes in a specific folder, but we can actually start to work across these cloud silos in a way that you can't really do in quite the same way as much on other platforms.
Well, and the beauty of iOS being so, what's the word, slimmed down versus macOS, mm-hmm. is, you know, if they did, I mean, they did something, if they do something like this on the Mac, Dropbox is probably not going to go along with it. Google's probably not going to go along with it. But on iOS, yeah. everybody's already, most people have already announced support for it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of work to be done for all of those providers. Like, they have to implement a couple of other bits and pieces. But essentially, if you've done a document provider already, you're 90% of the way there, as far as I can tell. I'm not an expert on what you've got to do, but it seems to me like you've got most of the pieces in place to integrate with files. And I think if you're a cloud storage solution that doesn't integrate with files in iOS 11, you're going to look pretty stupid pretty quickly. So it's something that I fully expect people are going to get on board with pretty fast.
Well, the thing about it is these products are kind of like, what's the word? It's very easy to move, like go to like Dropbox to Google Drive in a lot of ways, unless you've got a lot of like existing links you've shared. It's you know, it's like drag and drop your stuff over. Like it's not a hard change.
No. No, you can see how people might do that. And one of the things that Files does bring is, you know, Federico and I have complained about this on Canvas as well, the idea that you can only do those file operations one at a time from an app to a cloud service. What you'll be able to do now is you'll be able to get multiple files from a cloud service and do something with it. You know, you could pick up four from Dropbox and drag them to a mail message, for example. That's going to be possible now, and that's a really quite a big deal. I think that's one of those things where, you know, the people who could use iPad but it would be really tedious, now they can use iPad and it will not be any slower than using the Mac.
Yeah, so that'll be good. It'd be fun to see how this plays out throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah. Yep. Just a couple of things to mention, Bradley, just about systems administration and hardware compatibility. Again, we forgot to mention this earlier. This works on all devices that are 64-bit, but it's cutting off 4th-generation iPad, iPhone 5, and iPhone 5C. So those are the last 32-bit iOS devices that were sold, and none of those are going to get iOS 11. But everything from the iPhone 5S and onwards, and everything from the iPad Air and onwards, are going to get iOS 11. So there's not a lot of devices getting dropped that currently had iOS 10.
But of course, this does mean that 32-bit apps are dropped, correct?
I think 32-bit only apps are going to be dropped, but I think you'll still be able to ship an app where you've got a 32-bit binary and a 64-bit binary, but you've got to have a 64.
Right.
Like you can't be 32-bit only anymore. And that is something that, you know, you're going to want to have a wee look at that and see how many apps in your current deployment are 32-bit only. There's currently a warning panel for that in iOS 10, and then in iOS 11, you know, you're going to have some issues if that's what you're trying to do.
Well, and that, those apps clearly have not been updated in a while. But yep, that'll be a fun we deal with this fall.
Cool. So I think that's pretty much where we're at. Can I recommend that nobody install iOS 11 Beta 1 on any device that they care about? It is very rough at the moment. I've had weird issues like iPad getting very warm, things like that, battery running down like crazy in my bag. I've actually had to forcibly restore my iPad a couple of times. I mean, I don't want people to get worried about that. I mean, that's par for the course for such an early version of such a major change to the operating system, but like, don't be crazy and put it on your phone, right?
Yeah, this isn't like it's going to be weird. Like, this is like it could break at any point kind of update.
Yeah, this is not like being in the public beta for iOS 10.3.4, right? That's pretty stable, and that's a very conservative set of changes, but this is crazy town. And I think you know, if you are a sysadmin and you've got spares in your cupboard, get a couple of spares out, try it out and see. But you know, there's no way this is going on my main devices right now. It's just way, way too early for that.
And if you listen to that and say, I still want to do it, here's a tip. Turn off iCloud backup before you upgrade. And because what reason is once you make a backup with iOS 11 on it, you can only restore to iOS 11. But if you turn off your backups and you decide like 2 days later, like, this is terrible, I'm going back, you can just DFU it. And then load your iOS 10 iCloud backup. And so, yeah, just turn off that backup.
if you use Apple Configurator, you don't even have to DFU anymore. All you just do is press the restore button in Apple Configurator. You'll get a warning that says you're about to downgrade your operating system, and then you just say go ahead and downgrade it, and it will restore the device back to the current shipping version of iOS 10, which is what I've done for a couple of devices so far. But yeah, it's the future looks great. I feel sorry for Apple engineers, a lot of work to do between now and then, but I think it's going to be an absolutely storming release for iPad users.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Just looks like 10.3.3 will be the last iOS 10 version. I'm on the public beta for that. So yep. I'll tell you one thing I ran into last week at school. I realized my Wi-Fi in my office was really slow. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Like, something doesn't feel right. I realized I have 200 iPads on one access point.
They're all in your office, of course.
Yeah, and they're not close enough to see another one to load balance it. I'm like, oh. Mm. So, and I had been kind of slowly cleaning them and things like that. But you know what I did the remote shutdown from Jamf, and by gosh, it worked, and it was fantastic. And it was like I was refreshing my Aerohive Hive Manager NG page, and it was 200. It was 202 devices, and it was 5 devices. I mean, it was fast.
Yeah, it really is. And I've been interested as well. I've used that feature a lot more than I thought I would. I was like, well, why do you want that? Particularly when it comes to the end of year stuff, I have definitely been using that quite a lot.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on this beta. I'm sure the public beta will be out in a few weeks. Thanks everybody for listening this week. Thanks for Jamf for sponsoring the show. And again, don't install iOS 11 just yet. I'll have links to things we talked about in the show notes at outofschool.net. As always, we appreciate a review on iTunes at itunes.com/outofschool. And we'll have, again, links at outofschool.net. And I am on the web at chambersdaily.com, and I'm on Twitter at Bradley Chambers.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
Have a good week, everybody.